You're listening to Ham Radio on KAXE,
Cooking with Amy Thielen.
I remember everything, every song you sang to me, making coffee every morning. Doesn't matter where I go, another day, another show. Nowhere else feels like home. It's alright. You know how I like it.
Class. We'll be talking about growing, harvesting, cooking the summer surplus, about what to do to keep weeds down, about growing cool varieties of vegetables you can't buy anywhere, a new trick for growing tomatoes, and of course, how to deal with the crushing all-at-once harvest here in the north.
Okay, so I think Amy, one of our guests, summed it up the best about this kind of abundance. She said the garden harvest is a blessing and it's a curse.
Yes.
Do you feel that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, what starts out as like so much enthusiasm in the spring eventually becomes, it turns in eventually to garden guilt.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of my friends who keep gardens, you know, feel the same way. Heidi, do you have a garden?
Ish.
Yeah.
Garden-ish. I don't have a lot to do with it. It's kind of up the hill from our house by our barn. And definitely we plant things, we grow things. I haven't invested enough time in it. I have the guilt on the other end of I should do it more.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Well, something, you know, I didn't really grow up with it. My mom, sometimes it skips a generation.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, my mom, she grew up weeding her mom's huge garden and, you know, behind their house, and it was about 2 acres, and it was one of those like 1950s flat, you know, gardens where they tilled everything, and she weeded the cucumbers, she picked them, she went through it. So I really never knew a vegetable, like I didn't know a red pepper that didn't have a sticker on it.
I didn't either, now that you say that. We never grew food as I was growing up. My grandma, I think, dreamed of her house, her the homestead in Jacobson, the Finnish homestead, but mm-hmm. she moved to the city, so she didn't really do it, except she always planted cucumbers, her cukes, in the backyard that went on her trellis, and so she still felt like she had that.
Right. Yeah. Well, my mom would stop at farm stands, too, so I knew, like, the flavor of, like, those really, really fresh potatoes,
mm-hmm.
You know, perfect snap peas, fresh raspberries, all this stuff. And, you know, when I moved back here, it's like so many of my neighbors and so many of my friends, and I'm sure it's the same for you, they have gardens, and it's just like an automatic thing. They don't, you know, they don't romanticize it. You know, it's really easy to romanticize it. And sometimes people, you know, I have a big garden. I have a big flower garden, too. And they're like, oh, do you grow your own food, all of your own food? And I'm like, no, it's northern Minnesota, you know, we have, as you said, what's tonight's low?
Yeah.
Or high?
Mid to upper 40s tonight.
Right, mid-June. So, you know how it is, it's like, it starts out kind of slow, we have so much sun, you know, the sun doesn't go down until, what, 10:30 mm-hmm. at the height, and then things just start exploding, and then it comes all at once. That first week of August. So don't schedule anything the first week of August. You know what I mean?
Yes. Because then you got to figure out what are you put this time in, right? What are you going to do with it?
Well, right. Exactly. So basically that brings us to our first guest, Erin
mm-hmm.
Haefeli. She is the person, she's my lifeline for calling. She's a friend of mine. I call her when I don't know what to do with a big harvest. Erin has, she's a chef. She has a restaurant in Walker, Minnesota called The Green Scene. She also runs the Walker Farmers Market. So she gets, she has access to all of these amazing growers and producers and people who raise, you know, meat as well, cheese, bread, vegetables galore. She's kind of the juggernaut. She's the person who knows all of the good stuff, all in probably 100-mile radius. So I'm excited to talk to Erin.
Yeah, we're going to listen to that conversation. This is Ham Radio on KAXE.
there aren't very many people I feel like I can get into a creative zone with about cooking. Like, you and I, you know, we don't talk that much on the phone just about life, but we do exchange these very lengthy text messages and exchanges about cooking and recipes and food and what we're going to make with whatever it is that's come in the door. We both have that issue where sometimes there's a surplus, or maybe I'm trying to work out a recipe for something like an event or something, and we can kind of crawl into the same thought bubble and get right in there and start talking about, let's say, example, you know, those green almonds you got a few months ago. You had a case of green almonds, right? Didn't you have a case of green almonds?
There was two things that I ordered in without a plan. So you end up with 40 pounds of fresh green almonds. And then I also ordered fresh garbanzo beans. One, to challenge myself. But then when they arrived, I had no idea what to do with them. That's when I texted you and said, have you ever dealt with fresh green almonds or fresh garbanzo beans? And it took one person standing there cleaning those green almonds for like 6 hours. And we ended up pickling them. The garbanzo beans, we ended up frying as a fritter. In your cookbooks, have you ever made a recipe out of something you've had too much of?
Oh, I mean, all the time. I feel like that surplus is those really unwanted surpluses is what they are. You know, when you have too many green beans or you have too many tomatoes, I mean, who wants that? You don't really necessarily want that. But if you're growing your own food, that's just what you get. I would say most of my recipes come out of that, having to make do with what I've got and come up with something on the fly. I mean, definitely like from my first cookbook, the green beans sweetened with vinegar, which is a really weird old German recipe. And they're, you know, they don't photograph well. This is like a mature green bean that maybe you've frozen, you know, this comes from my stock of frozen green beans that I have to do something with them. I can't throw them away. But when you cook them with like caramelized onion and then the beans, and then you add a little bit of vinegar at the end, they turn sweet. It's just really weird. So that would be one. But I want to talk about your food. You know, when people talk about growing food and gardening, a lot of times that conversation stops at the harvest or right before the harvest. So it's all about how do you grow this and soil and varieties. And, you know, there's so much to how to grow things, but really it's a linked thing. Cooking, gardening. There's no reason to garden as a home cook if you're not going to also be equally passionate about cooking. That's where I'm like, who can I talk to who really understands that on a level that is really interesting and deep? And I guess so I kind of want to ask you, I know a lot about varieties and vegetables and how they behave and what they're going to do. So what was your relationship with gardening or growing vegetables specifically when you were growing up?
My entire family on both sides are so rooted in food, but the vegetable portion, the gardening portion came from my grandfather, who always had a big garden. He would start inside and then, you know, up north would have this giant garden. So the variety started from him and being introduced to different colors, like started with different colors, bell peppers. And I remember as a kid walking through the rows and then pulling off not a green pepper, but a red pepper. And I remember thinking, I see green peppers on the plate, but I don't see red peppers. And then I'd pull it off the vine and I'd eat it just like an apple. I'd also eat onions like an apple as a kid too. So it wasn't that unusual, but I'd say my grandfather. And then it would be the abundance thing too, because all of a sudden we would have to be shucking peas for days on end. I used to love to see the carrot tops come up and the tomatoes and the beets. And I did have my own garden until I was much older. And I always had friends that have big gardens. And I think it's so funny because I was always careful about how much I planted because I would see their anxiety flourish same time the garden was flourishing, like in August, and they'd be so overwhelmed and their countertops are covered with fruit flies and produce, and then they got to do something with it. Now I'm lucky because the farmer's market comes to my back door, so I do a little less gardening.
Well, yeah, you run the farmer's market, so I know what you mean, though. It's like, why be the gardener yourself when you clearly have a place in the ecosystem in your community, which is to be the person who does some of the cooking and takes care of it,
Yeah, you find the person that grows the best carrots. I still have a small garden at home. I did it with the children. My kids were little, so they could understand that a carrot grows from the ground and has a green top. It doesn't come in a little bag and baby carrots. But yeah, I'm very lucky now to have the farmers bring their best of their best right to our back door.
Right. Let's just do a hypothetical. Okay. You have too much cauliflower. I mean, in northern Minnesota, do you ever have too much cauliflower? But let's say it's just like a bonkers year, right? And they're beautiful. And you know how like garden cauliflower, it just feels so much more real. When you see like how it grows for real, it's kind of more spindly and like a bouquet. The stuff at the store starts to look like Fisher Price.
It's so compacted in the store. The stuff I see grown is very loose. Like the florets are loose. It's like a bouquet. Like you could stick it in a vase and use it that way for a while until you want to cook it. But I must say, I've never seen an abundance of Minnesota grown cauliflower.
Okay. I picked a weird one, but I am just thinking about, okay, so not a lot, but let's say you had some. So it's rare. It's true. You have it though, and you don't usually have it. So what are you thinking about? Like, what do you want to make with that?
Anything that is rare, like morels right now, artichokes, that very rare. Can you get one to grow in Minnesota? But you can. My grandfather used to do it. Anything like that. My mother and I, our go-to item for vegetables is brown butter. Like, that's it. I want to taste the vegetable. And I want a little of the savory, and I want a little bit of salt. And I don't want to hide it. But it's rare. When you have an abundance of tomato or zucchini, then I'm willing to throw it into stew, you know, mix it with other ingredients.
Do you do any like note taking or sketching or thinking about like what you want to do as a cook and a chef, like creatively things you want to try?
Well, I'd say both. We've been doing this for so many years now. I think it's like 15 years we've been down here. And so we're pretty used to knowing when the asparagus arrives, when the berries start, when the corn comes in. And there's certain things that we make every year with those items. But I would say that also when it arrives, it will spark something new. You know, a couple years ago, we got corn. We serve corn on old-fashioned corn platters, you know, the dishes that look like corn with the, what are the things called that you put on the end of corn?
Corn holders.
Yes, I just love it. Yeah. So we'll serve it at the restaurant like that, just for fun. But then one year we decided to make corn ice cream where we're steeping the cleaned off corn cobs. So sometimes it does just take this leftover. What are we doing with all these cobs? Are we going to put it in for the chickens? Or can we season a broth with it? And then one year we made ice cream. And now that's something that we make every year. And it's so much.
What else is in the corn ice cream?
After you've cooked the corn, you take the corn off, put that in the freezer, and you take the cobs, you steep it in the milk and the cream. We do add a little turmeric for color because you kind of want it to look a little yellow. And the turmeric doesn't add much flavor, but it gives it a nice bright color. But you get enough corn cobs in there, and it tastes like buttered popcorn. Because if you think about it, the heavy cream is so buttery. Delicious. Mm. It's something different to use your corn than you normally would. Do you have a favorite vegetable that you get excited for that you know you're going to get in abundance?
Cabbage. I love cabbage. I grow those Murdoch cabbages. That's the variety I've been into, and they're pointy headed.
Are you fermenting them? What are you doing?
Mostly fresh cooking. All the cabbages, as you know, are so different. So that conical cabbage, it's loosely packed or loosely wrapped. The layers are loose when you open it up, and there's space in there, and it's crispy and tender. I also grow like a larger storage cabbage where it grows like more like packed tight. And those are juicier and better for like shredding and making fermented things because they have a lot of juice. When you get some of those loose cabbages, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you like to work with those? What do you do with those?
Well, I mean, I love cabbage too. I love to ferment cabbage. I love to fry. We did the like tempura fried cabbage leaves.
Yeah, that's really good.
So you could do anything with the cabbage. It's one of those sort of underappreciated vegetables. I love a good coleslaw. It is such a versatile vegetable that you can roast, you can saute, you can grill, you can steam, shred like a salad. I can't think of too many vegetables that you can really go across the board.
Yeah,
and apply any cooking.
I feel like it has so many different personalities. I mean, if you keep it dry and fry it, it'll stay like dry and get crispy like roasted Brussels sprouts. But if you cook it moist, like under cover, it'll just kind of go flat and be very soft and tender. So
you stuff it, make leaves, sandwiches. Oh. I mean, so many things you could do with a cabbage.
Tell me about this onion pie, this recipe that you sent to me. We're talking about what you might want to share with our community to cook for the week. And you gave me an onion pie.
Yeah, the onion pie. My mom's recipe. And I think we all have a comfort food recipe that somebody in our family makes. And this is my comfort food recipe. And I also think it's such a simple recipe to make. It's not intimidating. It doesn't require a lot of ingredients. I always feel like anytime you buy a bag of onions, you always have extra onions.
How do you make it?
Oh, I make it how my mom makes it. So you got to caramelize the onions. And she doesn't go too far. She doesn't brown them so they're not completely falling apart. But I feel like you could play around with it. It just requires more onions then, right? Like the more you cook it down. Butter.
Are you caramelizing them or you're stopping short of caramelizing?
I say just short of it. Like a little color, but not necessary. You could go short of it so it doesn't have any color. So they're just nice and wilty. And she cooks hers in salted butter. I would do mine in unsalted.
That's a generational thing. My mom and I are the same.
Does she use salted butter?
Yeah.
Does she say why she uses salted butter?
I mean, I can't find any logic to it necessarily. I mean, it's what she's used to, and she seasons accordingly, and she always has, so why switch? And often it's cheaper. I don't know. I like the unsalted, too.
I just did control it more, but I grew up with salted butter. It does make a better brown butter. My mom uses the salted butter and then adds Lowry's, too. So
Lowry's.
I know. That's what we grew up on it, you know. The crust on the onion pie is Ritz crackers and butter, just some sort of soda cracker. I mean, that's just classic, right? You put that down in the bottom of the pie tin. You put your caramelized onions in, and then you top it with cheese. Now, she does a lot of just cheddar cheese, but I would add some Gruyere, cheddar. I might even mix a little mozza there to give it a nice stringy pull. But really open to whatever you want. I'm sure you could even do Velveeta. And a little American if you really wanted to.
Are you serious with the Velveeta?
I mean, if it's mixed with something else, why not? Not everything.
I think you're just being really generous right now.
Well, I think you have to use what you have. What you have on hand. But then you just add some eggs and some milk. Mix that all together and you bake it.
That sounds really good. I'm just going to read what you wrote to me about it. You never really announce onion pie. It just shows up and disappears quickly.
That's so true.
If you had ramps or something, like I've never found ramps around here, actually. Would you make use of them with that? Or
I would add ramps to it. I wouldn't make it 100% ramps, because ramps just aren't, okay, they're very strong onion.
Mm. Yeah.
But you could definitely amp up your onion pie by throwing some caramelized ramps in there, cooking some ramps with the onion. Why not? You could throw morels in there too, frankly. We could do a spring one that has fiddleheads, ramps, and morels. There you go. There's the onion pie for spring.
Yes. See, you just did it. It's always evolving. This has been really fun. I know this conversation between the two of us will continue for a long time on text as we try to figure out what to do with produce as it comes in the door.
That was Erin Haefeli from Walker, Minnesota, of The Green Scene. And I feel like that was just the tip of the iceberg of what she knows about.
I feel like I was eavesdropping on
vegetables.
You guys, on what you normally do in this talk of all this food. And it was a revelation for me on the brown butter.
Yeah?
I think I only once have done that because I feel like it was above me. And I feel like now when I get some fresh stuff, that's all I'm going to do, because you really need the vegetable.
Yeah, taste. Yeah. It's so easy. So it's like, you know, when you here's what you do. You just put the pan on the fire, you put the butter in, and then, you know, my mom, I used to watch her make it, and it's like the butter would start to kind of rise up and foam up. It's like a mushroom cloud.
Yeah.
And then you could see it starting to turn brown.
What temperature of the butter? Like, I'm worried about it. Okay.
Medium. Mm-hmm. And then you can kind of like use a fork or a whisk and like whisk that in. But it kind of, like on vegetables, it functions, because it's kind of broken butter, it functions more like a vinaigrette. So you can serve things like warm and room temperature with brown butter on them. And it's not going to get all congealy and stuff. And also you could throw into that pan, you've got the brown butter, you take it off the heat, let it sit a little bit. Then you're going to throw in like rosemary maybe, or dried chili peppers or chives or something like that, like any kind of herb.
Wow. And let's talk about the onion pie a little bit.
Yeah, that looks so good. And that's such a comfort food throwback recipe for Erin, who I always think of her as like these, you know, she makes a really good like green goddess, like really great dips. Everything is so fresh. But this is something that, and it is, I mean, onions, when they're in season, you have a lot of them. They're beautiful. You know, you want to use like a sweet onion. This is a real homey, like her mom's sort of dish. And basically what she said, it's like, it's so popular, you have to make it. And she knows also that I love crushed Ritz crackers, basically, in anything on crust, you know, on top of or beneath.
Yeah, I sort of blame you, Amy Thielen, for coming back to Ritz crackers in my life, because it was on one of your recipes in your cookbook. And so, indeed, I even had Ritz crackers and tuna salad for dinner tonight, because I have jumped on that bandwagon.
Yeah, well, there's no substitute.
I know. I love that. That's an easy recipe. We'll be telling you more about it. Our community.
This is the community recipe
ding,
this
ding.
Week. Yeah. Where's the gong? Yeah. Onion pie. Erin's onion pie is going to be on the website.
It is right now. If you go to KAXC.org, look under programs for ham radio, read through, and you'll find the link there. Also, sign up for the newsletter. So what's your issue with Velveeta, Amy?
I was surprised.
It's cheese food, right? It's not cheese.
I was surprised.
Oh my gosh.
But no, she was just, I was like, you're being really generous. I mean, who knows? You use what you have. That's the point.
Do you have something sort of like an onion pie that isn't super chefy, but what came from your family?
I don't know.
Like that? Okay.
I don't know.
We would love to hear from you if you have a recipe like that you want to tell us about, if you started thinking about your garden, right?
Yes. Yeah. So if you have a story to share, you can text us or you can call us. We'll be taking calls in a little bit at 218-326-1234.
We did get a text in already, and we heard from a listener on the Iron Range saying growing nasturtiums and putting them in a salad, especially when you have grown your own lettuce, fantastic, and edible flowers was a revelation.
Oh, yeah, that's so pretty, too. Nasturtiums are great. Hmm. You know, they're peppery. They kind of, like, trail and grow all over the darn place. Yeah, they're beautiful. It's a beautiful thing.
We're talking gardens and cooking what you might be growing tonight. And we're also going to meet another friend of yours I'm very excited about.
Beth Fredrickson. Beth Fredrickson, I know. You want to be friends with her. Everybody I introduce her to is like becomes her best friend, and I get jealous. I love her. She's a great cook. She's a longtime friend of mine. She lives outside of Osceola, Wisconsin on a hobby farm. She and her husband, John, they have a big garden. They keep alpacas, which she also harvests
wool.
okay.
Sure.
She harvests it.
Right.
And she spins it.
Oh.
And then she knits.
Wow.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
And they keep chickens, and sometimes they even keep pigs. She is also the person who, I call her the first lady, because we have done deer camp for many years, deer hunting at my place, and I'm cooking all the time. And Beth is often the only other lady. And she sits across the counter from me, and she just knits and talks, and we just chat. One time she knit me this beautiful rug while we were there. I didn't know she was going to give it to me at the end of deer camp. She gives it to me. It was so nice. But she knows a lot about growing lots of different vegetables, and she's just, you know, growing tons of flowers and, you know, dealing with her own chickens. She just got the whole, it's all that stuff. She knows so much.
And she started talking to us about what's going on in her garden right now. We get to learn about her special kind of gardening.
Right. So she wanted to talk about Hügelkultur.
Okay.
And it's really interesting. It's a kind of raised bed gardening.
All right. You're listening to Ham Radio. Text us 218-326-1234.
I just got some delicious radishes out of my garden, out of my Hügel bed. We moved into this house 13 years ago, and it's on a lake. And so when I started gardening here, I would dig holes and they'd fill up with water. And I was like, oh, this isn't going to work. So then my husband built me these Hügel beds, Hügel culture beds, which a friend of mine was telling me about. And he's like, oh, you can make them out of anything. I made one out of a old couch. I'm like, what? And I went over to,
wait a second.
To
okay. Just describe like what it is so that we can kind of visualize this couch variation.
Ours, we made out of corrugated steel roofing panels. Mm-hmm. They're 3 feet tall by 6 feet long and 3 feet wide. And they're just perfect. I think essentially you can make them out of like whatever you want. Like mine are just like 80% filled with wood, like sticks and whatever logs that we had laying around. And then we have alpacas. So I kind of backfilled it with as much compost and alpaca stuff as I could and chicken stuff that comes out of the chicken coop, whatever.
Hold on one second. So it's a raised bed.
Correct.
Like, why wouldn't you just do a normal raised bed? Like what makes it Hügel culture? Like you're filling the bottom with like stuff
with wood. I think that's what makes it a Hügel culture, because then like as that wood breaks down, like every year I have to backfill them a little bit with compost or whatever, but not terrible, you know. Like I have one right now that's probably a foot below the top of the bed, if that makes sense. That was my first one actually, and so that one's really decomposed a lot, and then all those microorganisms and delicious things that just are like the plants want are in there. And then
it's interesting because basically what you're doing then, so instead, for one thing, you're saving all this topsoil or soil. You're not having to like buy bags of soil or whatever to put in the bottom of the 3 feet high, 4 feet high, whatever. But then it sounds like does that wood decompose pretty rapidly? And then when it does, you're really building like that organic matter material in the soil. And there's, you know, like good soil, they say, has kind of like a network of like, you know, like little mushroomy roots underneath. So it's like kind of knit together.
Right.
Aaron and I have been having a no-till argument, pro and con, for like 20 years.
Who's pro-till?
Well,
you want to till. Okay.
Because he read on the internet about no-till, and like, you, the same thing, you build this, like, by not tilling, you're building like this network of little roots, and it's like, makes it better. And then, but if you're the person who does most of the hand weeding,
exactly.
Yeah, no, I'm like, oh my God, I can't do it. It's like, I'm,
well, can I tell you, though, having these Hugel beds, first of all, they're beautiful for weeding. Like, I weed all the time because it's, you're not bending over, you're not get down on your hands and knees, which I don't really mind. But when you're weeding, like, onions or peas and radishes, it's just right at your waist. They're so great. I just love them. So John made one first, and then I think now I have, like, seven.
So they're, like, kind of ergonomic.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Exactly. For, you know, for people that are getting up to a certain age, it's nice to not have to bend over if you don't have to.
Which we and are.
You don't have to water them every, you know, because like it's all just there. And not that you don't have to water them. You do, but not as frequently, perhaps. And it's so gratifying to go down there and be like, oh, all right, things are looking awesome here.
Here's what I'm thinking, though, too, is that, okay, for one thing, it seems like you probably are getting less weeds because, I don't know, they'd have to blow in just so.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
But then also, do you ever just want to put like a row cover on it to start the season?
I have two of them. Actually, I feel like I got them after I was up at your house because one summer you had freaking awesome peppers. And I was like, how did you get these great peppers? And you're like, I cover them with these. And they were like, I don't know, little domes like on hinges. But that's only for the peppers, I guess. I'm always excited to get this season going. But also, the spring season is pretty busy for me between school and tennis. So I'm like, oh, whatever. It happens, it happens.
What are you growing in those seven?
Everything.
Google beds?
I have, oh, you know what I've been really getting into lately? It was like this epiphany I had a couple of years ago. I'm like, oh my God, I can grow other beans besides green beans, which I know sounds stupid, but... You know, so now I've got like
these it doesn't black... sound stupid. There's like so many kinds of beans.
Well, yeah, like I've never grown like dry beans. Like grow the beans, let them dry, put them in a jar, have them all winter. Like that was a new thing to me a couple years ago. And I was like, oh my gosh, like I have this 1,000-year-old cave bean, and I've got, you know, these black beans going, and just all these kind of fun little beans that are like, oh, these are great for, you know, chili, and this is great for refined beans. So that's been my latest obsession.
So you were kind of an innocent about the beans. That's great.
Totally innocent about the beans. But now, not so much. And now I've been like, oh, I don't need to buy more beans. I can just plant these from last year. So, and I had a ton of volunteers come back.
Oh, really?
Beans. Oh, yeah. Cool. My black bean that I planted last year, I don't know what it is. I should have known that. I should have studied before this interview. But I've got all these volunteer black beans coming up in where I planted cabbage and Brussels sprouts. So we'll see how this goes. But I don't have the heart to pull them out because I'm like, oh, you're doing a good job. And I feel bad about pulling you out. So I'm not pulling them out.
They're trying so hard to live. Yeah. Are they bush beans or are they pole? Because if they're pole, then you're poles would be really high, or you just let them kind of drape over and like spill over?
Nope, we took a cattle panel. Do you know what a cattle panel looks like? Like,
I don't.
We use them for fencing around here. Like, okay. So they're just a long pieces of rods of metal welded together. Mm-hmm. We put one in one end and then made a big arc out of it and put it into the other end. And so it's like a hoop with this cattle panel, and then the beans are growing up on that.
I just want to say, your garden's really beautiful.
Oh,
I mean,
thank you.
The whole setting, you're on the lake, and then you have this big, large, beautiful old farmhouse, and then you've got the chickens, you've got the alpacas. What's your favorite thing to do on the preserving end of gardening?
I think dilly beans are worth doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, I don't even really make pickles because I'm like, you know, having a couple cucumbers just like at the right time and the right size you're better off just going to a farmer's market, I think, than trying to plant all that in your own garden. But dilly beans, oh man, are those good. And then I just take, I have a real simple recipe from my aunt that she used for pickles. And I was like, well, I wonder if I could just use these for dilly beans. And sure enough, and they're crispy and they're delicious. And sometimes I slide a jalapeno into the jar when I'm canning it and then boom, so good. So that's one thing I really like doing in the fall. The other is like when I get overrun with tomatoes, which, you know, is a blessing and a curse. I don't have time for it. I just blanch them real quick, get the skin off, and then quarter them, put them on a cookie sheet and put them in the freezer, take them out, and then put them in vacuum bags and just seal them up and put them in the freezer for whenever I need, you know, like for chili in January or sauce in December or whatever. And it's just so good. You know, it just tastes so much better than anything from the can.
So much better. I think that the title of the show is going to be A Blessing and a Curse.
Well, it's true, though. I mean, yeah, it's just, you know, like, oh, I go back to school in the fall and I coach tennis in the fall. And so that it's just like, oh, my gosh, I don't have time for all this. But then I always feel bad about this bounty that I have. And so then it's like, oh, put them in the freezer. Yeah. That is super easy to do. So
it's really kind of, there's a lot of gardener guilt.
Yeah.
I feel like you really have to make use of it. And if you don't, it's like a waste, but you're making all this kind of work for yourself, but it's, you want the stuff. It's just kind of an emotional maelstrom. It's just.
Totally. I think it's the recovering Catholic guilt too. Like, got to do this.
Can we get your dilly bean recipe? Because,
or not?
Yeah, is that possible?
No,
you
I
have
don't
to
care.
Do it right this second, but like, maybe we want to share that. And
it's super simple. And like, it just is like 16 cups of water and a cup and a half of salt, you know, pickling salt.
Yep.
And then it says, I heat that to a rolling boil. I use the turkey cooker to do it outside.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a double batch. Oh, look at my notes. So I guess 4/8 and 3/4 would work too. Put all your stuff into the jar, like all your beans.
Do you blanch the beans?
No, because listen, this is how this grows. So beans and, you know, some dill and some garlic. And then, like I said, if you want to make them a spicy bean, then throw a jalapeno in there or whatever.
Yeah.
But then, okay, so your jars are packed full. Then you get that brine to a boil, and then you pour it into the jar. You let it sit for 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Then you pour the mixture back into the pot, and you bring it to a boil again. Mm-hmm. And then you pour it back into the jars and seal them up.
Oh, that's interesting. I like that. And so that's kind of like blanching them in a sense, but
yeah.
You water bath process?
Oh, yeah, water bath. Yeah, except for sometimes, you know, they just seal on their own.
Well, just take a screenshot of that, if you don't mind, and tell me whose recipe it is, if you want a credit or if you want to just start calling it yours. That's cool, too.
Nope, I'll call it Aunt Patty's Pickles. No, we can't take credit for, you know, I can't take credit for it. She did. She was great.
Talking to Beth. That's Aunt Patty's Pickles, you guys. I mean, we can write that up. I don't know if it's going to pass like the home extension test at the extension office.
Sure.
I can run it by there. Just because, no, I mean, you have to give it 10 minutes in the water bath.
Okay.
You know, when she's saying, oh, it seals on its own. Yeah, but we can't like endorse that.
Okay.
But it's such a cool, technique, because what she's doing, instead of like blanching them in a pot of water on the stove, they're blanching them by pouring the hot brine over them, letting it sit, pouring it out, pouring it back. It's cool. Really cool way to do it.
Yeah. We are talking about gardens and vegetables. Let's talk about some of the things growing in your gardens or what you're thinking about.
Yeah. I mean, I think the reason that I have to plant a garden every year is because I have these specific varieties that I have to have. And summer doesn't seem the same without, like, okay, zucchini. Everybody grows the same kind, basically, right? And they're very prolific. Well, I grow this weird Italian one. It's becoming more common. It's called Castata Romanesco. Mm. And it has ridges, and it's a lot firmer. So if it tastes nutty. And I like to, like, even make salads out of it raw, which you kind of can't do as well with, like, the other kinds.
Yeah.
And it sprawls all over, like, you know, like it owns the place. And so it's big, a big plant, and it doesn't produce that much. So that's one of them. Then I grow like ox heart tomatoes.
What's that?
Okay. The one I grow is called Hungarian heart, but there's Amish paste. There's a few in this category where they're like a Roma tomato, like a paste tomato, kind of oblong. They're kind of a cross between a paste tomato and a slicer or a beefsteak. Mm. So they're a little bit juicier, but they're still meaty and they make a good sauce. Hungarian heart, that's definitely one I grow. What else do? Those wide Romano beans, have you ever seen those? They're like flat, potted.
Yes, but I haven't eaten them.
Like wide Italian pole beans. Yeah.
Are you, when those you're walking in your garden, are you just pulling and eating too as you're out there?
Sometimes. Okay. Like, you know, cherry tomatoes.
Yeah.
Peas.
Yeah.
It's hard to get the peas out of the garden.
Yes.
You know, you have to plant so many of them and shuck them. There's really only like one day that's like the sweet pea day, you know?
Right. Hey, we do have a call coming in on Ham Radio. Christopher from Stillwater joins us now.
Hey, Christopher, you're on Ham Radio.
Hi, Amy. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Hanging in there. It's a rainy day here in Stillwater.
Oh, really? Good for the garden. What do you want to talk about?
Well, I need some advice from native Minnesotan gardeners. Okay. I'm a Californian myself, and okay. June is just overwhelming. Mm-hmm. What do you folks do to pep yourself up, to get yourself ready for this just explosion of growth that we have?
You mean the harvest now, or do you mean like later in the summer?
No, I mean just the garden prep and starting when all the weeds and everything is just happening.
Yeah, because you go straight from winter into summer. You slam right into it with no spring. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Exactly, yeah.
Yep, you never get ready for that, just want to say. yeah, you can tell yourself you're going to prep. We try to prep some things in the fall, you know, like rip some things out. My husband, Aaron, he's got like a canister with a propane burner. Do you know what I'm talking about? So he walks around mm-hmm. and like burns it all the, Heidi's laughing at me. he burns a lot of the vegetation so that, you know, the weeds don't come up. But yeah, it goes so super fast, right? The other thing we do a lot of times is, you know, as Beth was just talking about, like kind of raised beds with a cover on them or something like that. So that gives you like a little greenhouse you can start planting in right away. Mm-hmm. So that you can get a little jump start so that you don't have to plant the entire thing all at once. Like I do mesclun, arugula, different little greens and things in like those raised bed things so that with a cover, so that like a little hothouse, so that they don't get as many weeds that way. Otherwise, I don't know, just kind of do your best. What are you growing there?
Well, so our big thing is we've got a peony farm, and so that takes up a lot of time. Cool. But then I'm trying to always fit the garden in, and so we've got the tomatoes and some raspberries and things like that. But yeah, it's just trying to figure out how to, when all the weeds come up and everything is going 60 miles per hour, to find that time.
Well, you have a peony farm. That is so cool.
Yeah.
Where do you sell those?
We're in the process of establishing it, and peonies are interesting in that they take 3 to 5 years to start to flower. So we planted 1,000 of them last fall, and right now it's just making sure those little plants survive.
Wow.
A lot of weed in the thistles and those sorts of things.
Thistles, yeah.
Yeah,
lots. Well, that's so cool. Well, I mean, those are kind of a June flower too, so maybe, you know, you could also grow stuff that only... It's like more late season to space it out a little bit.
That might be the key, is just to keep the tomatoes and all those things that give us a little bit more breathing room. Yeah. Mm.
I have just one other question for you. Why peonies?
So my wife grew up on a farm and always wanted to do something related to farming, but didn't want to do corn and soybeans and beef like she grew up with. And got really into cut flowers when we lived in the city and wanted to do something that was a little bit more like an orchard where you have a distinct growing season and kind of a distinct season where you harvest, instead of more like a market garden where you're constantly doing many different varieties of flowers and then you're replacing them over the course of the season. So in some ways to try to, because we do it on the side, to try to do it in a little bit more concentrated of a period.
That sounds like it's so beautiful. Peonies are the most beautiful flowers. You have to send us a photo of that if you don't mind.
I'd be happy to.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for your call.
Yeah, thanks for the pep talk.
You're welcome. We do have another call coming in. It's Zachary.
Hey, Zach. You're on Ham Radio. I think I know who this is. Yeah. It's Zach Page.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. How are you doing?
Hey, good. I'm actually in the garlic field. I'm in amongst 10,000 garlic plants right now.
Oh, really?
That's what I'm looking at. And I got a headset on, so it's all good. You can hear me well.
Yeah. So you said how many? How many garlic?
10,000.
Okay. Why? We're talking to people who grow a lot of things.
Yeah,
we just talked to a guy who has a peony farm.
No, I don't grow garlic, so I'm assuming that's a lot of garlic, right? That he's growing.
It's okay. Yeah, it's a medium amount.
Okay.
We plant it all by hand. We go to the Minnesota Garlic Festival. I sell seed garlic. I'm also a seed breeder, and I've got a seed company called North Circle Seeds.
Yeah.
One thing I could talk about a little bit, which has been a lot of fun for me this year, is growing and, well, not growing because I'm always growing garlic, but is to harvest it in the spring stage and have young garlic.
Ooh.
And it's something that I kind of marketed to our food co-op. Mana Food in Detroit Lakes, and just put it out there, and people are buying it, and it's basically just young garlic. You could just pick it at this stage, in the early stage, and it kind of looks like scallions, but it tastes like garlic. So you could get garlic in the spring.
Oh, wow. So it's not even like the bulb isn't really quite developed. It's thinner?
Yeah, exactly. It's still in that single bulb stage, so it kind of looks a lot like scallions. But it's actually a little bit bigger than that. And then, it didn't double. So garlic is really interesting. Garlic itself is a leaf.
Yeah.
And the leaf, and it's almost like an always growing leaf. And it just always divides and grows. And then you plant the clove in the fall.
Right. That's why you never really grow it. Because it takes up such a long time. I'm too impatient, but you know what else I love is like, and you've given me some of your garlic and it's fantastic and it's huge. And I love that. I love that garlic though, when it's like freshly harvested too, before it dries out. And, and it's a little fuller, but it's still really moist and kind of sticky coming out of the, you know.
Yeah.
And
got all the medicinal qualities. Yeah.
Oh, really? Like what?
Well, garlic can be an antiviral. Mm-hmm. It's also antifungal, but it's basically like a preventative medicine to the cold.
Yeah. Are you growing those eggplants this year? Zach grows these really cool eggplants.
Yeah.
From...
I'm growing.
Yeah. Tell them about that, because that's so super cool. I grow it too.
Yeah, a friend of mine, his wife went to Japan, and they kind of live over there, too. And so they came back with early Shinkoro black eggplant, and that's Japan's kind of the place that made black eggplant famous, or they do it really well. Mm-hmm. So I was excited to get seeds from them, and then we tried, what we always do here is trial and taste about 10 different varieties of the kind of eggplant. So we trialed like 10 different kinds of black eggplant that year, and this one was just phenomenal, just better than the rest. So that's the one that we see from, the one we grow.
Oh, I love it. It's my favorite. Thank you so much, Zach.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to talk again.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Yeah, sounds great.
If you aren't able to get through, you can always text us a story, 218-326-1234. We did get a text from John in Chicago. He says, Amy, great show. I limited our raised beds to 2 items this season. I'm growing on Herbe de Provence garden for using fresh and drying come fall. I'm planning to make stuffed grape leaves with Niagara and Concord grapes that are growing on my fence. Wonderful show.
Oh, that's so cool. I've always meant to do that, like pick the grape leaves and kind of, you can do like a pickle or you can just blanch them and put them in the freezer, I guess.
Oh, all right.
Cool.
We got another call coming in. It's Carrie from Black Radish.
You're on Ham Radio.
Hello, this is Carrie. How are you?
Oh, hi, Carrie, Black Radish. I think I follow you on Instagram, right?
Yeah. Yes, you do. Yeah. How are you today?
I'm good. So what's going on in your world with planting here in June? You have a CSA, right, Heidi? They have a CSA.
Oh, okay.
And it's in the front yards of many different yards across Minneapolis?
Yeah, so we're in South Minneapolis, and we have 15 front yards that we grow produce for a 50-member CSA, along with we have a few restaurants we sell to, and then we do a donation program with the Sane Foundation. So they get all of our extra produce to help feed people.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So we are growing a lot right now.
Yeah. So you plant the stuff and you're maintaining it and then harvesting it, and people just get to enjoy the gardens. Is that right? Am I understanding that right?
Yeah. Totally. So all the people that give us yards, we call them landshare people, landshare owners or whatever, and they get a CSA in exchange for their land. They don't really do any of the work. It's more we do the work, and then we harvest, and then they come every week with other CSA members to pick up food. So it kind of builds like community within our little area, and then and everyone gets food, and no one has lawns. There's like 8 of them on our yard, or in our block. Like 8 different yards on our block have these land shares, and so there's a lot less mowing and a lot more food. And I don't know. We've been doing it for 7 years, so we've built up to 15. Yeah.
So you must like grow things kind of intensively, right? Like tight.
Yes.
So,
for sure. We have to do it really compact because we are in such a small area. Like our 15 yards is actually just a quarter acre.
Okay.
So we have about a quarter acre of land, and that land can feed, you know, 15 or 50 families over 16 weeks in the summer, along with the donations and the restaurants, which is great and amazing. But yeah, we have to keep it really tight. And practice a lot of like intercropping and different things to help the plants thrive together, but have more than one planted in the same area.
Yeah. Like, so tell me, give me an example of like, what's a good intercropping like that? Planting one thing on top of the other, sort of.
So like if you have a large area of tomatoes, you can grow carrots around them, and it helps build the soil. Like, so the carrots dig into the ground, and then the soil is not as compact, and then the actual tomatoes grow above, and as they grow above, they kind of shield the carrots from heavy rains and high, you know, like high temperatures and stuff like that.
Oh, and they grow together. That's so smart, because the carrots don't need that much sunlight as it gets, you know, as the season goes on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It makes them a lot happier. Those kind of things we have to do just to make enough food for all of the people.
Yeah. Right, I'm going to try that. Carrie, thank you so much for calling.
Of course. Have a great day.
Yeah, you too.
It's Ham Radio. Again, if you can't get through right now, you can text us at 218-326-1234. We did hear from Adrienne from Deer River. She said, we grow an abundance of potatoes on our small farm here so we can share the harvest with the community. We grow Yukon Gold, Pontiac Red, and Purple potatoes, and I'm always the designated mashed potato maker for the fall holiday season. Nothing's better than potatoes, butter, and cheese. Thanks for hosting Ham Radio.
Oh, that's sweet. She's right about that.
We also have Julie joining us now.
Hey, Julie, you're on Ham Radio.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good. What are you thinking
good.
About?
So, well, I'm sitting here on the dock on Mantrap Lake, Big Mantrap Lake, and I'm really perplexed by how in the world would I ever fix a muskie. Like, we have so many muskie, and my kids keep pulling them in, and I keep telling them, throw them back, and now I want to know, but why should we throw them back? They're legal to keep, and we could fix them, but can we? Can we fix a muskie?
You mean, can we cook it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Like,
I mean,
I don't really want to, like, do all the stuff, but, you know.
Okay, like, 2 weeks ago, I got caught with a question that I had to really should have looked up the DNR.
Yeah, no sushi out of the muskie. We know that.
Okay, but listen, this is so interesting because I have often wondered the same thing because my uncle is a muskie fisherman.
Sure.
And, okay, Julie, so in this old cookbook, like when I was researching years ago about Midwestern food, there was this recipe for one giant muskellunge and it fed...
That would be it.
That, yeah, I know. It fed like a, it was like a town feast sort of thing. And like they opened it up and stuffed it and put it on a spit or something. I don't know. I'll have to find that. That's so do you never cook them?
Well, no, I keep making the kids throw them back because I mean, what am I going to do with Walter? You know, I mean, he just keeps swimming around the dock and then he gets bigger and bigger and I don't know how to cook him, so I don't want to waste him.
You mean you've named the fish?
Well, just, you know, in the spirit of On Golden Pond, why not?
You know? Oh my gosh. So how could you ever cook Walter? But I think someone listening will have some ideas for us here. You can text in 218-326-1234. I bet someone has cooked a Walter-like muskie before.
Okay, because everybody tells me muskie are not very good, and so throw them back in. But yet, not only do my kids catch them, but then my nieces and my nephews, and then I have all these fishermen who are all around my dock, and they're fishing, and they're throwing these giant lures in, and they're bobbing up and down, and they're trying to catch the grand muskie. And yeah. I'm just like, dude, like, you can't even eat them. Like, why?
Oh, I know. I know, like, yeah.
Insta moment?
I mean, I think it's just fishing. I mean, I don't understand fishing without eating it either, but I do know that a lot of anglers in this area, in our area, because we're kind of spoiled, and there are a lot of people who are like, oh, that's not good, that's not good, and it's like, a lot of it's really good if it's fresh, you know?
Yeah. It is fresh fish. And even if you have to fillet a northern, God forbid, which I'm not good at, then it's still good. It's still fabulous, whether you make it into a taco or you serve it with some broccolini, if you can find it, and all that kind of good stuff. It's all good.
I bet if you put it with a whole bunch of fresh vegetables from the garden and stuffed it with that and did that method you were talking about, that that would be great. Mm-hmm.
Always musky. Fried in butter, though. I mean,
yeah, like, really, yes.
Yeah, brown butter. That's the answer.
Yes, yes, indeed. Well, I think.
Oh, thanks for calling.
That would be great. Text it to the number that I called from, and he'll be happy to send it to me.
I'm going to look it up. I'm going to look up if it's legal or not. I don't want to get us in hot water, but I would say why not?
Exactly. Okay. That's a great, great, great proposition. Thank you, my dear.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for calling.
We thank everybody. We're running out of time, but if you missed getting to call in, please send us your text, 218-326-1234. We just heard from someone who sent us a book recommendation cookbook or planting called Carrots Love Tomatoes, Secrets of Companion Planting for Successful Gardening.
Wow, that's news to me. I didn't
know that. So
that
was kind of like what
Carrie said.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Companion planting, that's the word that I was kind of searching for.
Yes.
So it's about, yeah, planting things all together, like famously.
Yep. This one is by Louise Riott. Okay. So they sent us that book, but then the last part of the message just says, hate muskie. So I'm not quite sure what that means.
Okay. They're saying that it doesn't taste good.
I know. There's so much more about cooking and gardening and all of this stuff, but we are out of time for Ham Radio.
Thank you for calling. Doesn't matter where I go. Another day, another show.
Nowhere else feels like home. Ham Radio is produced at the KBXE Studios in Bemidji and made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund of Minnesota. Hosts and creators Amy Thielen, produced by Heidi Holton. You Know How I Like It is a licensed original song from Jeremy Messersmith. Original Ham Radio artwork by T.L. Celine and graphic design by Christopher Larson. Thanks to KAXE's Chelsea Perkins and photographer Lori Shaw. Find more Ham Radio at KAXE.org and on your favorite podcast platforms like Apple, Spotify, and more. Sign up for the Ham Radio newsletter at KAXE.org. Making coffee every morning. Doesn't matter what I do.
If I fall for someone new. Coming up, it's On the River with DJ Dang and friends. This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. We are people-powered radio in northern Minnesota. Join us at KAXE.org and keep your stories coming. Text 218-326-1234. If I'm honest, it's just okay. It's so nice. You know how I like it. Mm-hmm.